Medical information obtained from our website or on the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If you have, or you suspect you might, have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a healthcare provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of the sports doctor, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Hey, everybody. Live from Chicago, it's the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist. I want to welcome everybody tuning in. You know, all things sports medicine, fitness, wellness. Absolutely. You know, March Madness, we're excited here in Chicago, man. Loyola, a small school, won the national title in 63. They're in the Final Four. So is my alma mater, the Louisville women. So a little bit of bragging here. We're excited. We've got a great doubleheader today. I'm going to start off with Janice Meredith, JBM Sports Parenting, and her blog. And she's coming back for a return visit. We're excited. Janice is one of the experts in our upcoming hashtag Hey Sports Parents with the book coming out this month. Then an old colleague, Augie Hurt, will be joining us. Augie is a former world-class race walker. He's taught thousands the technique of the world of race walking. I think he taught Oprah Winfrey. I got to ask him that. And then it's the Sports Doctors in answering emails. But first, I want to welcome back Janice Meredith, JBM Thinks, Sports Parenting Blog. Janice, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me back. I appreciate it.
It's great. Why don't we jump right in? Give us a little bit of history and background. You, sports parent, your blog. Tell us a little bit of that background.
Sure. Well, I started the blog about 8 years ago, but I actually was working on it for the previous probably 22 years, I guess you could say, because I raised three children who played sports from the time they were like 4 years old all the way through college. And my husband was a high school coach for 29 years. And so I was in that world. I lived in the world. I became very familiar with it. And I saw the value that youth sports had in my kids' life. And so I started the blog, and it kind of just turned into a movement, I guess you could say. I started, you know, getting people from all over the world actually who follow it. And I write for other websites as well now. I have some ebooks out. I've got one book out. And I'm also starting to do some coaching right now for parents, just individual one-on-one life coaching for parents whose kids are going through difficult things and whose parents
sports,
feel like they
sports
might
enjoy. Or no sports? Sports or no sports as far as the coaching?
Well, it can be for either parents, mostly for parents, but it's either for, it can be for sports parents or just for parents who,
right.
You know.
Or sports grandparents. Parents. You know, Janice, I featured Parenting the Athlete on the Sports Doctor probably 20 years, give or take a few weeks, probably longer, where we've talked about the challenges, we've talked about the epidemic of injuries we're seeing, we've talked about way out of line Bengali coaches and that crazy world, and that's why we're excited about the upcoming book, hashtag Hey Sports Parents, and being able to use you. We have sports psychologists, personal trainers, a lot of people I've worked with and had on as guests, and of course my co-author is a Hall of Fame volleyball player, Sharky Zartman, who's also a radio host. So it's a very what did your husband coach, Jen?
He coached mostly football. He did some, also did some high school varsity softball as well. So,
and how about your children?
My children.
What sports did your kids play?
They played the variety of sports growing up. I mean, they played basketball, volleyball, track, soccer. They played them all when they were you know, in school. When they went to college, my son played football, my oldest daughter played softball, and my youngest played volleyball. So.
Wow, that's quite an array. You know, it's funny, Sharky, my co-author I just mentioned, both her daughters became Division I volleyball players. And it's a crazy world. Again, like you said, your blog's been around about 8 years. What's the website, Janice, for the JBM?
It's J, B as in boy, M, thinks, thinks.com.
Right. Now, that's a great title because that's what we're talking about. All these things that go into whether your son or daughter is the best athlete in the country, or you're trying to keep them from getting hurt, or let alone the challenges of football. And all these other things with the head trauma. And you were a mom, and your son played. So that's, you know, again, a whole other challenge.
Yeah, for sure. He actually, I'm sure he probably might have had some minor concussions in high school, but when he was in college, he had a pretty good concussion, and so he was out for, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks, which he hated. But, you know, I was grateful that they were being very cautious about it. So,
well, you remember, you know, when you started the blog and there was much, much, much less information. Again, I've been talking about concussions and football for at least 2 decades and the evolution of what we've learned. And that's why one of the titles in my part of the book is called What Are We Going to Do About Youth Tackle Football? Great question for society. We spend a lot of time also, I know you do, and again, it's in that title, thinks, on the mental game. And those challenges both for parents and for the athletes themselves. What are some of the hot topics that you've really featured and enjoy with your blog?
Well, I think a lot of it does focus on the mental game. Athletes who struggle to get motivated, parents who think that their kids may not be giving 100%. They're frustrated. They don't think they're trying hard enough. I think that there's also frustration when it comes to playing time. I hear parents complain a lot about, you know, the politics that are involved.
Yes.
With a lot of the teams and, you know, the good old boys.
Those
kids,
are big topics,
you know.
Jan. Those are big topics. It's interesting. Two of the experts, along with you, we have like 8 of them. One is Rob Andrews, who runs the Institute of Sports Performance in Houston. And 4 out of the 5 gold medalists, including Simone Biles, he worked with since they were kids. Ian Goldberg from iSport 360, his whole world and the whole app information is about parent-coach communication. And again, like you're talking about, in whatever level, whether, again, it's the reason that, you know, the playing time hassle or the overkill in that regard is also a very, very big concern. And what are some of the other things you highlight?
The whole idea of, well, I'm really believe very firmly in the idea of raising a champion. And I think that this is something that is not necessarily does not begin in the dugout or on the sidelines, but it actually starts at home. And
yes, it
so,
does.
You know,
point.
Raising a champion involves who the parents are and how they handle things, not just how their kids, you know, whether their kids have a great coach or a good team. You know, it involves the parents.
It does. It's interesting. Right at the beginning of the new book, my poster boy, the 2010 men's Olympic figure skating gold medalist, grew up here. I put orthotics in the skates. He was 10 years old. And his quote at the beginning of the book, he talks about his mother and she made me strong, boy, and she really didn't let me quit. And just a wonderful quote about that whole world, whether you are the best in the world, and I watched him grow up, and that kind of challenge, you know. And another one of our parents in the book, Kirk Mango, is the author of the book Becoming a True Champion. And again, they talk about that boy, the mental side of things, and you know, those challenges. And a lot of them are physical also, where we see there's an epidemic of repetitive motion injuries, and there's an epidemic because now we see so many kids specializing. But I'll defend some of these young figure skaters and gymnasts and tennis players or soccer. That's all they want to do. You could tell them all day. You'd love them to play multiple sports, but the prodigy sports, that's the title of one of the chapters, you know, it's a tough sell. So the world of specialization has become a big deal. As we flirt with what you just said, you know, developing a champion and the incredible influence that parents have.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with that. And I think that, I mean, I've obviously never had a child that was going to go in the Olympics. So I'm sure that there does have to be a certain amount of focus on one sport for someone like that, because they start so young.
Yes, it's one of the challenges. You know, a young ballet dancer doesn't want to play soccer.
Yeah.
She loves, or the, you know, when we watched the Olympics, it was so incredible. And we see a 15-year-old gold medalist, young girl figure skating champion. And you say, I wonder how old she was when she started. But even, you know, having a college athlete who plays football, you're already one out of thousands. You know, a lot of times that's one of the big concerns, which is that pressure on that boy or girl from coaches and or parents. So I always ask people like you, you know, how your sports psychology skills are.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure.
Right?
But, you know, yeah, and the thing is that, you know, your child actually, like you mentioned the word prodigy, like the majority of kids are not going to be in the Olympics, you know, so that, you know, it's the parents of those kids that are in the Olympics had to know at an early age that their child really had something special. And, you know, but most parents and most athletes are not even going to play past high school. You know,
true.
So it's just being able to distinguish, you know, whether this is going to really be something that their child's going to be in and go all the way or not. That's something a parent has to figure out.
Yeah, but a lot of times, you know, we might see there's millions and millions of kids that are on two or three traveling soccer teams, and they're playing 5 days a week. One of the biggest things I see in sports podiatry, Jan, is overuse injuries. Just all the running and pounding, whatever the sport is. So one of the things we face, as this has gotten to be a big, big deal, like I think it was 3 months ago, maybe four, the front cover of Time Magazine, Jan, was a young little leaguer, maybe 12, and the headline was the $15 billion a year youth sports industry. Mm-hmm. The traveling and the expenses, I would think, you know, factor in. But it's interesting how you mentioned parents and coaches right off the bat as some of the things that you've been discussing, including when you were raising the kids, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that, first of all, I think parents and coaches need to realize that they're on the same team. They don't have to agree necessarily on everything, but they're on the same team, and that team is to give the child a positive, challenging experience that is going to help them grow as a person and as an athlete. And so,
yes.
You know, they're not on opposite sides of the team. You know, they're on the same team. And I always tell parents, you don't have to agree with everything the coach says. You don't have to agree with his strategy. You don't have to agree with his offense or his defense. But, you know, the things that you can agree on are that the kid, this is for the kids. Let's come together and make sure that the kids are coming first here. And that's the
yes.
thing that...
There's a key word. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a key word that we got to add, of course, Janice, and the word's fun. We're talking mm-hmm. about kids. And many times we'll see, that's why we woke up one day 15, 20 years ago, we saw that, you know, half the Little League kids are dropping out. They've had it. It's just not fun. These all these mm-hmm. pressures, and this is where I talk a lot about the, I have a chapter in the book on youth sports and drugs. And this is where, again, when we have serious kids, not champions, not Olympians, but you've got a lot of kids, they're playing a few different sports, they're playing year-round, they're really pushing it. And this is many times where we start to see the challenge of over-the-counter pain medication in order to stay in the game, which is one of my major, major rules on the sports doctor to all parents, which is if your son or daughter needs pain medicine to participate, you're over the line. And we've come a long way in positive information, and you're one of the real educators. Has that been your experience, that there's been a lot of real attention like the JBM thinks, and this whole world of parents on the left, kids on the right, now I'm also saying in the grandparents, hey, sports grandparents.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think there's, you know, I think there's been, there are a lot of people out there that are trying to give a positive message, and a lot of them are doing it towards the coaches, which, you know, the coaches need to be in on that conversation too, because it, they're part of the equation, and they have a big impact. But, you know, I know there are some talking to sports parents. I've met a lot of them myself. So there's a lot of good voices out there, and hopefully we're making some good. Hopefully we're making a difference. That's all I can hope.
Oh, yes. My impression is absolutely all areas, you know, whether it's the nutritional area, whether it's paying attention. You know, we've just gone through a unbelievable experience in coach abuse world. And we're, I call them Svengali coaches in the book, where we have some of these overwhelming physical and mental coaches. Gymnastics, of course, is famous for it. And so are some of the other sports, where we have this way out of line demand and on some of these kids. You know, competitive sports doesn't mean fitness. And like you said, I think very importantly before, by the time you get to high school, you got like 10-15% of the population is playing something. You know, here's my pearl for all the sports parents with JBM thinks. You know, pay attention to the role of the foot. Pay attention to whether your kid's in the right shoe. Pay attention to the role of orthotic strengthening the feet and ankles. Again, the reality is our children have an epidemic of overuse injuries because of the demands on them. And we really need to pay more attention. The old Dr. Scholl's commercials now gets it right, Janice, where they're talking about born to move, maybe feet, ankles, knees, and back. So the your kids all play competitive sports. And the what are some of the ages that you deal with when you're doing some coaching and you're aiming at JBM thinks really in the world of mom and dad?
Yeah, I mean, it can vary. A lot of the times the older, the parents who have older athletes, you know, they think they figure they've got it all handled. They don't need any help. Some of them still do, but I find that most of the people that really are listening are the ones with kids and athletes in middle school and younger, because, you know,
excellent.
They're just,
I'm
yeah,
glad
I
to
mean,
hear
I
that.
Think there are some high schoolers in there too, but, yeah.
That's where we have to make changes. Again, when you're starting to see serious kids, I have 10-year-old figure skaters. They skate 10 days a week. I can't believe how the time flew by. Janice Meredith, JBM thinks, coming back on the Sports Doctor. Janice, give me the website again, please.
J, B as in boy, M, thinks, thinks.com.
Great. Janice, hold on a second. Everybody, we're going to be right back with the Sports Doctor.
Fox Valley Wellness Center is a highly regarded leader in holistic health, led by Dr. Steve Maress, one of the first Lyme's disease literate physicians in the Midwest. His team of integrative medicine practitioners blend the best of conventional and complementary therapies. Dr. Maress is president-elect of the prestigious International Lyme and Associated Disease Society. They specialize in treating the causes of disease, not just the symptoms. Fox Valley Wellness Center also offers hyperbaric oxygen treatment. Located at 180 Knights Way in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. For more information, call 920-922-5433. That's 920-922-5433. Hey, the sports doctor's in. Dr. Bob here, sports podiatrist. If you live in or near Aurora, Illinois, and you're into sports, fitness at any level, or your son and daughter is, you cannot forget about your feet. Your feet affect everywhere else. There are complex motions that come into play, especially in sports. Your ankles, knees, hips, and back all are affected with your foot mechanics. Come visit the office, Dr. Bob, and get evaluated. Check what shoes are best for you. I offer prescription orthotics, which is usually one of the major tools for treatment and prevention of foot-related ankle and leg problems. Also, enhancing performance. Step or two quicker. Call 630-898-3505 or go to sportsdoctorradio.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back live from Chicago. It's the Sports Doctor. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist. Go to my website, sportsdoctorradio.com. You can go to radio shows. You can go back 10 years and check the topics and who's been on. Listen to whatever you'd like. Check out newspaper articles, magazine articles. So much different information from choosing the best shoe to women in high heels. We love to feature some great athletes in the past, some of the my favorite orthotics athletes. I want to welcome Augie Hurt. Augie's a former world-class race walker. He's taught it to thousands of people. Met Augie in the 1970s as he was training, and I've known him since. He's still got the orthotics in his shoes, man. Augie, welcome to the Sports Doctor. Augie, you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah. Welcome to the Sports Doctor, my friend.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. Good. Augie, talk a little bit about your history and background with race walking.
I played 7 years of baseball. I was ran for 6 years all the way up to my senior year of college. And then I switched to race walking, and I found the longer the race, the better success I had. So I just hung around with race walking, I've been, you know, then when I retired, I decided to give back to the sport. So I've taught over 71,000 people race walking with fitness one-on-one. And that's more
didn't
than
you teach Oprah Winfrey?
World.
Didn't you teach Oprah Winfrey at the Heartland all those years ago? I knew you did.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, everybody, go ahead. Oh yeah, Augie. I remember 1976. I think race walking was not included in the Olympics. And if I recall, and then I remember 1980, we boycotted.
Yeah, in 1976. My event was the 50-kilometer race walk. I was second man for the U.S., and that was the only time that the 50-kilometer was not actually in the Olympics. That Montreal had to cut costs, so every sport had to drop one event, so they dropped my event. And the IAAF said that's not fair, so all the 50-kilometer race walkers met a month later after the Montreal Olympics in Sweden, We had our own race. And then in 1980, when the U.S. boycotted all events, then all the athletes had to go to extra.
I remember that story.
So I got shafted twice. But I,
yes,
but
you
I mean,
did.
I was on three U. I was on three world championships, and you know, so I did get, and I was on a 13 national teams. So I got some, you know, exposure, you know, and getting out of town and walking it against the best in the world, and so it was.
Yes.
I really enjoyed my competition.
Yeah, I was kidding you. He probably had. I remember I referred you to Bob Guida, our great kinesiotherapist all those years ago. And again, if we take the orthotics out of your shoes, they probably say 1978 on them or something. The world class level. Tell us about race walking. We all know, you used to amaze me. You would say, you know, you're doing six and a half minute miles. But what is it about race walking that's unique between running and walking?
There's, you know, I'm always a friend of the runner. You know, like I said, I used to run. The main difference is walking in race walking is a low impact, and running is high impact. So not as many people can do the running as they can do the race walking. There's actually rules, technique rules in race walking that I incorporate into my fitness classes because they have fitness benefits too. And one is when the it's basically heel toe walking. So the heel touches the ground, toes up, and then you pull yourself forward. That works the hamstrings and rear end muscles. And then the second rule is you have to keep at least 1 foot on the ground at all times. You know, a runner at some point is always has both feet off the ground. So that's what makes it a low impact exercise, where people that are trying to lose weight, you really don't want to start off running. You're going to injure yourself most likely. It's better.
Well, what was
to
interesting too, also, Augie.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember. Yep. I remember in being aware of your teaching and what some of the, we're talking about race walking for fitness, and you know, almost like a push pull. You know, the hips are so involved, and so beside it being, you know, low impact, and it's very unusual how it looks when you look at it from the front of the back, and all those rules like you're talking about, the leg is straight and your leg can't read the ground. But I remember you always talking about whether it was the midsection, whether it was the butt, whether it was the hamstrings, besides the feet and ankles, that really were getting work that even more efficiently than running.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, you with technique. When I used to run a marathon, you know, I'd be tired in the race, but then I'd be hurting really bad for a couple weeks later. And so you didn't hurt so bad in the race, you hurt afterwards. When I race walked, I was really hurting in the race, but then a day or two later, I was fine. The 1 year I won the 100 mile, I was actually back in another race the next week. And when I would run marathons, sometimes I really couldn't run another race till a couple weeks later.
I tell you, you know, I'll mention Ralph Mosqueda. Augie, to you and to everybody. Ralph was on the show probably in April. Ralph is from Belgium, called from Belgium. And Ralph was, for the summer, running across Europe. He ran 40, 50 miles a day. I wouldn't have thought it was physically possible. He ran for the cause of obesity, and he made it. So, you know, when I'm thinking about the differences sometimes in the amount of pounding and the overuse, you know, I've seen a couple of high schoolers that were really serious race walkers. Is it included in the areas like in high school, college, Augie?
It tends to be the state of New York, when I was still involved with competition, tend to have the most competitive race walkers. And then how I got started, the NAIA colleges, the smallest level of colleges, they have it in their competitive in their national championships. When I was a senior in college, I actually was the only athlete from my college to win a gold watch at the Kansas Relays. So, you know, the Kansas Relays actually had a race walk in it. And so I've won races between 1 mile and 100 miles.
Really?
So you have a pretty wide range of opportunities. And, Bob, I just wanted to let you know, I wanted to thank you. In 1979, you actually read an article about me in the paper, how my injuries, and then you called me up and said, hey, I can help you. You put me in orthotics, and then you introduced me to Bob Guida. And then when I was training for the 80 Olympics, the months leading up before the boycott, I was actually in the best condition of my
life.
Yes,
you were, man.
And a year before, I was ready to quit because of problems. So, you know, anybody that if you're out there and you're an athlete, you know, make sure you look into sports medicine, qualified sports medicine doctors, because they can put you back on the road.
I'll tell you, you know, to say thank you very much for that. I remember it like yesterday. We were in the Bolingbrook office, read about you, excerpt in the Bolingbrook paper. I was newly excited to the T for the year or so before that I met Bob Guida, and all of a sudden this whole sports medicine world exploded around me. And as we both know, Bob loved the role of the foot and its relationship to whatever the sport was. And really, called you out of the blue in that regard. And so I remember now, what kind of times when, you know, race walking, you know, you think 4 minute miles and that kind of stuff. But you guys are fast, aren't you?
Yeah. And you were talking about the foot. A competitive race walker takes, like 2 to 3 steps per second. So you're really out there, really moving. I was more of a long distance. I was number one ranked in the country for 5 years. I set 11 American records, and I still own 3, and one of them is 50 miles at 9 minute per mile pace.
Wow.
And my 100 kilometer was 10-minute miles. My 100-mile was 12-minute miles.
Yeah, now again, so, you know, when you're talking 10-minute miles, you're talking about a light jog, easily.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's incredible. But in the competitive over a mile, what would a race walker do?
A friend of mine in Wisconsin, Jim Hiring, that actually probably came down and trained with you and Bob, I brought him down. He held the record for a while, 5 minutes and I think 34 seconds.
Wow. Race walk. We're going to talk more about it. We're talking with Augie Hurt, former world-class guy. You listen to all these records. It's incredible. So we're going to be right back, everybody. It's the Sports Doctor. Hey, everybody, Dr. Bob, you know on the Sports Doctor how much I pay attention to working those feet and ankles. You know, you're never too old to play in the sand, especially with the Sand Dune Power Stepper. You can improve balance, stamina, strength, and stability while working everything from your toes to your thighs. It's fun and easy. This amazing high-tech, multi-purpose foam device is used by everybody, from superstars to grandmas, to prevent and overcome foot and ankle injuries, increase balance. Professional athletes can improve performance. Great example is legendary strongman Donnie Thompson, who's really having some fun with the Sand Dune. Go to sanddunestepper.com or visit Instagram. Lots of great stuff at Sand Dune Stepper. You can also call 714
995-4500. Hey, sports people, listen up. Groundbreaking Vector Mouthguard has ESP technology and impact intelligence. That's right. Vector Mouthguard is a smart mouthguard. It gathers and transmits impact data, and it's infected on the brain in real time, straight to your coach's smartphone or computer. The Vector Mouthguard not only combines the optimum positioning of a mouthguard, but it means safer games, enabling you to play better and play smarter. Visit VectorMouthguard.com or call 425-372-7811. That's 425-372-7811. Smart mouthguard.
Hey, everybody. Buzzing back live from Chicago. We're local here, too. All you heard, Chicago area, suburbs, all things sports medicine, health and wellness, sportsdoctorradio.com. Also, 34,000 followers on Twitter. A lot of great sports information we have on Twitter. Go to at sportsdoc, DOC radio. Augie Hurt, again, former world-class race walker. You've taught thousands and thousands. In between, we were talking about that famous spa in mid-Illinois called the Heartland Clinic. I think you mentioned it opened up in the 80s. And they were way ahead of their time in a lot of stuff. And you were involved in teaching race walking. Wasn't it back in the 80s?
Yeah, I taught from 83 to 99. I was the last class for people that came in for the weekend, and I was the first class for the people that came in for the 5 or 7 days. So I worked I'm an accountant, so I worked Monday through Friday, and then Saturday I drove downtown, did my Chicago Walkers Club. Then on Sunday, I drove down to the Heartland, 2 hours south of Chicago, and taught race walking. So it was 7 days a week for like 16 years.
Lucky you were in such great shape. Yes, I spent a couple of times out there speaking on the role of the foot, speaking on shoes. It was a great facility. I think they had some real celebs. Weren't you out there teaching again? You met with Oprah Winfrey. You gave her a few race walking tips. Was she a good student?
And you know what was what made it interesting for the people in the class is I made my classes very simple, so I never had music. And so when we were doing the warm up, she said, "Augie, how come you don't have any music?" And I said, "Well, I like to keep it simple." And she goes, "Would you mind if I sing while we walk?" And like I had 15 people glaring at me, like, "If you say no, I'm going to kill you." Yeah. So I said, "No, go ahead and sing." So she, when it warm up, she'd sang like a song that she knew for a whole warm up, and it was the only time she sang at the Heartland.
Yes, you would have taped that. You would have been on TMZ or something, man, or on Around the World.
What I would do, it was special. I videotaped my class. I would videotape them before they started. And then I videotaped them after they were done, you know, when they were. And then I showed them so they could actually see what they were doing. Because that's the challenge with race walking. You can read a book, but you really don't know if you're doing it. And so people actually could see themselves on the screen, and then I could tell them, show them exactly what I was talking about. So I might not have I don't have her singing, but I do have. People said they would kill me. If I ever showed them race walking, because
it probably could be. How popular is race walking now? You know, it's part of the Olympics, men and women, right?
Yeah, the women have a 20K, the men have 20 and 50K.
Okay, and how popular is it? More popular around the world, or is the United States kind of the the base. Where is race walking? Where is it from? Is it from here?
It started in England in the 1800s. They used to have long distance races where you could make a living as a walker, and then so it started there, and then United States. It's real popular, like Russia, Mexico, Italy, Europe. United States, it never really became that popular. I think it has to do with it looks silly to people that don't know what it is. And it really, there's a learning curve.
It's a big point. Yes, it's a big point. You've always said that.
I set the American record for 50 miles, 9-minute miles. Well, the first time I did a 1-mile walk, it was like 8 minutes and 41 seconds. So basically, you know, you got to hang in there a little bit to teach your muscles how to do it, and learn the technique, and then you just incorporate going longer and faster.
Yes, because I think it's something that's been always an oddity, yet there's no doubt, especially watching you all those years, in the physicality, let alone the technique and the science of it, and that whole application regarding, again, specific technique. And I know that you always made a big deal about that the learning properly. And I was interested, again, you know, is the United States competitive?
When I graduated from college, I moved to Clem, Missouri to train with Larry Young. He won 2 bronze medals in the Olympics. He's been the only person that has won a medal in the Olympics. We've had, in 1988, we had a walker win a bronze medal in the World Championships. You know, back when we used to race, and we were all amateurs. And so, and other countries, you know, the people were in the army or something like that, and so they
right.
get subsidized. And we've never, you know, there's so many other sports that people can make money on. It's been hard for the United States to. And well, I think the main thing is it's hard for the U.S. athlete to train with a group. All the other countries, all the people train together, and they push
yeah.
each other. That's what Larry Young and I had when we trained together. We used to go out for like a 20-mile workout. The first half mile, we would talk. The last 19 and a half miles, we wouldn't say a word. We just
yeah,
walked as
right.
fast as we could. And so you develop that kind of concentration and focus, and that's what keep you going for such a long race.
What's your involvement, if at all, in the world of race walking today?
Not too much. I did start a race walking club in Chicago in Lincoln Park. I started in 85. Before I left, I started a mentoring program with the Kenneth Cooper's Aerobic Institute. I ran around the country teaching. I was the teacher of the teachers, and I did the same thing for my walking club. Before I retired, I taught the instructors there how to teach race walking. So that's been from 85, and it's really hard to keep a race walking club active for that long. So the people,
I remember,
I appreciate
right,
the people.
You had your downtown, you know, lakefront, group for all of those years. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, track's an interesting sport around Olympic time. It's one of the biggest sports in the world. And then sometimes in between, you know, in the United States, you never hear about it. You don't see it yet around the world. It's such an incredibly big deal. It's great to hear that you might have your 2 cents worth in the area, you know, with teaching of the teachers. And we've seen in the office a couple of competitive race walkers. And they knew you. I think yeah. they were old students of yours. I think they were from Palatine. I'm not even Palatine, Illinois. I'm not even sure. I remember you always had light shoes. And the does race walking have a specific shoe?
We use racing flats that runners use. And
racing flats are still around.
Yeah. Yeah, because the runners are still around. So we use the same shoes that the marathon runners use, and that you want just a lightweight shoe.
Yes, that's amazing. When you would do all those miles, I tell you, man, the time flew by. And you had said to me, you wondered what you talk about. Just the time flew by. Augie Hurts.
Yeah.
The man's what's your position today, Augie?
Well, I'm a certified public accountant. When they boycotted the Olympics, I'd already graduated from college, so I went and took night classes, studied for the CPA.
Right. Anyway, so Augie, I want to thank you, man. Got to cut you a little short. I want to thank you so much. Hold on, quick second, Aug. Everybody will be right back with the Sports Doctors In segment.
Live in or near Aurora, Illinois, and you're into sports, fitness at any level, or your son and daughter is, you cannot forget about your feet. Your feet affect everywhere else. There are complex motions that come into play, especially in sports. Your ankles, knees, hips, and back all are affected with your foot mechanics. Come visit the office, Dr. Bob, and get evaluated. Check what shoes are best for you. I offer prescription orthotics, which is usually one of the major tools for treatment and prevention of foot-related ankle and leg problems. Also, enhancing performance. Step or two quicker. Call 630-898-3505 or go to sportsdoctorradio.com.
Hey, back to Chicago. Here we are. You know, man, that was great. Augie Hurts talking about. I should make him into a commercial. Really, the orthotics, like almost 30 years old, and the what a class athlete he's been. Hey, it's the Sports Doctors In segment where we mention who's coming on over the next couple of weeks, and then we answer some emails. But usually, up front to that, we talk about. Man, it's going to happen within a month. The book, hashtag Hey Sports Parents, is going to be out. And we're very excited about that. We had our first guest today, Janice Meredith, one of the contributors, one of the experts that we have contributing to a chapter in the book. So we're excited about that. And I'm still excited about my participation in, again, my co-author of Hey Sports Parents is Sharkey Zartman. She's a radio host at Healthy Life Radio. She's a prolific writer. She's written 6-7 books. And just the past month and a half, she authored Empowered Aging. And she's got maybe a dozen contributors. I'm one of them. I have a short chapter. My chapter's called Aging is a Balancing Act. And beside it being a cute title, it really talks about the importance of balance exercise, especially as we age. So again, man, we're going to be talking more each week about the book. Next week, I'm excited to have back Rich Dubin, celebrating his 10th year, Lower Extremity, LER magazine, just about every physical therapy, kinesiology, training, doctors, are familiar with Lower Extremity Review. He's been on before. And then Sports Nutrition from the Inside Out, returning a sports dietitian, Jill Lane. Following week, dentist, Dr. Mike Hutchinson. He's the creator of a specific, I think it's a power mouth guard. He'll correct me if I'm wrong with the title. The importance of the mouth guard, it's huge. And then locally, Megan Long is one of the physical therapists with Athletico, and she's worked with one of my champion figure skaters at least 10 years, Chloe Ryan. We're going to talk about that whole aspect of the importance of physical therapy for these kids. So great guest coming up. A few emails here. And again, you can email me, drrweilsportsdoctor@yahoo.com. drrweilsportsdoctor@yahoo.com. Tom says, talk a little bit about orthotics and figure skating. My daughter's 11 years old. She's already serious skating 5 days a week and doing double jumps. And she's had some concerns with her ankles on and off. You know, Tom, I couldn't recommend properly done orthotics and figure skater any higher. I've been doing that, I don't know, 40 years, putting orthotics and skates. We topped it off, man, in 2010 with Evan Lysacek, who grew up here in Naperville, Illinois. Evan was 10 years old. We put orthotics in the skates. 2010, he was the Olympic gold medalist. I'm still putting orthotics in 10, 11, 12-year-old kids' skates. And most of the time still, it's because there's a problem. Something hurts. The feet hurt, the heels hurt, the ankles hurt, the knees hurt, et cetera. But more and more, we're seeing enhancing performance being the reason we're adding orthotics. I have never had a coach call and say, you know, you slowed the kid down, ever. So any skating, whether it's hockey, whether it's speed skating, but again, with the tremendous attention we've paid with figure skating, this will help your daughter's ankles dramatically. It'll make her a better skater. Optimum alignment of the joints is one of the keys to edging sports like figure skating, skiing. You know, Stevie, he's a runner. He says, what about minimalist shoes? You know, I got a great article on that in if you go to my website, sportsdoctorradio.com, you go over to newspaper articles, and you'll see probably in the local trib an article on the minimalist shoes. Lighter isn't necessarily better. More flexible isn't necessarily better. Could be. We've seen a tremendous explosion of less is better thinking in running shoes. My advice, Steve, is if you don't have a history of problems, if you see that your feet and ankles have felt good, you want to mix in gradually some minimalist shoes. And again, minimalist shoes are made by still top brands. Could be New Balance, could be Nike, could be Adidas. It's less support. It's less control. So if someone's had problems in the past, we don't recommend it. Still today, I feel that the running shoe industry and their top-of-the-line shoes are a better bet for any runner as far as doing two things. One, preventing injuries, and two, enhancing performance. But if we see that we want to mix in minimalist shoes, and a lot of people like them, and we're not having problems, then I don't have a problem either with it. Mary says, you know, my son's a 16-year-old football player. He's played for 5 years. He's had these problems under the ball of the foot. They talked about the sesamoid bones. Mary, the sesamoid bones are normal bones that sit under the big toe joint. They're movable, and you can pound them. You can irritate them. In the world of the turf toe stuff in the past years ago with artificial surface, we started seeing more and more abuse. You could hyperflex that toe. You can stress fracture one of the sesamoids and have a problem. It could be a nightmare. It could be a surgical problem. Good news is, in most instances, proper orthotics, which can accommodate for that area. Some treatment might involve physical therapy, might have to back off. It's the diagnosis is the key here, Mary. You know, whether or not there's a fracture or developed in two pieces, or whether or not it's just the soft tissue tendons around it and ligaments that are the problem. See a podiatrist. See sports podiatry. Check that out. Hey, Jerry asked the question. We were just, you know, what's the best shoe? I'll give you a good answer, Jerry. Years ago, I had a colleague wrote a book about choosing the best shoe. A matter of fact, it's the title of a chapter of the upcoming book, Hashtag Hey Sports Parents. And his book, you know, called the Best Shoe, was a collage of about 20 different brands and styles. The point was, there is no best shoe. I have a couple of bullet points. Buy a name brand. Get fit properly. Half of us aren't even fit properly. And If you've had success in the past with a shoe, stick with it. If you see that you've got concerns, see podiatry, specifically sports podiatry. What's your foot type? Are you flat-footed? Do you have excessive pronation? You have high arches? You need stability? You need motion control? So shoes don't solve foot and ankle problems. They can make a positive difference. It's a good place to start. But I tell people all the time, go to a reputable walking running shoe store, get fit properly. That's a stunning stat that over 50% of people, including athletes, aren't fit properly. One of the things I liked about New Balance. I miss you, New Balance, Naperville and Geneva, Mirabali Shoes, that supported me for 4 years. New Balance has width sizing. So it's something that we always felt was an advantage, specifically women. Tina says, your article on high heels, Tina, it's one of my most notorious articles. Again, sportsdoctorradio.com. Wow. Zip over to newspaper articles, and you'll see the one on high heels, surviving the challenge. Really talks about paying attention to your foot type. Do you have hammer toes? Do you have ball of the foot concerns? Strengthening your feet and ankles, and having some sensibility in heels. So I think bingo, bango, bingo. I think we're about out of time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hey, catch you next week. It's the Sports Doctor.
Fox Valley Wellness Center is a highly regarded leader in holistic health, led by Dr. Steve Maress, one of the first Lyme disease literate physicians in the Midwest. His team of integrative medicine practitioners blend the best of conventional and complementary therapies. Dr. Maress is president-elect of the prestigious International Lyme and Associated Disease Society. They specialize in treating the causes of disease, not just the symptoms. Fox Valley Wellness Center also offers hyperbaric oxygen treatment. Located at 180 Knights Way in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. For more information, call 920-922-5433. That's 920-922-5433. Hey, the sports doctor's in. Dr. Bob here, sports podiatrist. If you live in or near Aurora, Illinois, and you're into sports, fitness at any level, or your son and daughter is, you cannot forget about your feet. Your feet affect everywhere else. There are complex motions that come into play, especially in sports. Your ankles, knees, hips, and back all are affected with your foot mechanics. Come visit the office, Dr. Bob, and get evaluated. Check what shoes are best for you. I offer prescription orthotics, which is usually one of the major tools for treatment and prevention of foot-related ankle and leg problems. Also, enhancing performance. Step or two quicker. Call 630-898-3505 or go to sportsdoctorradio.com.